On this episode, I'm in conversation with Jennifer Rogers. I tell you more about What Matters to You and how you can get involved in the upcoming What Matters to You Day. Welcome to the QI Guy in Conversation with podcast. I'm your host and personal improvement advisor, Jonathan O'Reilly. Thank you for joining me as we embark on episode 3, and I think it's going to be a really enjoyable and timely episode. We're going to speak to Jennifer Rogers, Associate Nurse Director in NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde in a wee minute, and amongst other things we're going to be chatting to Jennifer about what matters to you and what matters to you day. So before we get to that, you might be asking yourself, what matters to you? What's that all about? And it's become a bit of a movement within healthcare. It's asking that question, what matters to you, rather than what's the matter with you, whether that's towards your patient, or towards the families and carers that are involved. And it's about hopefully listening and understanding what's really important to that patient within the larger context of their life in relation to what's going on within healthcare. It's a very simple question. It's a very straightforward question, and many healthcare systems have adopted some kind of template or some kind of structured way of kind of asking that question and making visible what's actually important to the patient. It might be a specific family member gets some information. It might be being able to continue with their hobby while they're in a hospital, for example. If you've never heard of it before, don't worry. There's, of course, a website, and we'll put the notes in the show notes. There's whatmatterstoyou.scot for all you people here based in the UK, which is a fabulous website which not only describes exactly what matters to you is, but has lots of resources and lots of information. There's a recent webinar up there from last month, as well as case studies and different things that you can utilise. And there's also information about What Matters to You Day 2021. So what matters to you is, of course, an all-year-round thing. We would hope that clinicians and everybody that works within healthcare is thinking about and asking those questions to understand more about their patients. But I like to think of the annual day that we have as a kind of pause for self-reflection. And not only thinking about what matters to you as the patient, but actually what matters to you as somebody who's delivering health and care services. So the day is going to be on the 9th of June, so roughly about a week from when this episode drops. Again, you can go into that whatmatterstoyou.scot website and you can register for the day, so that way you can interact with colleagues around not only the UK but the world in terms of getting updates and being able to see what other people are doing. And of course, there's lots of free resources on the website if you want to promote and raise awareness of what matters to you in your area. There's also the whatmatterstoyou.world website, so that's WMTU.world website, which is a wee bit more of an international flavour, because What Matters to You is a movement that's kind of went beyond where it kind of began in the US and the UK, and is now in I think about 40 or so different countries around the world. So now for my conversation with Jennifer Rogers, where you're going to hear more about what matters to me or what matters to you and the work that Jennifer's done within Greater Glasgow and Clyde. Jen is the Deputy Nurse Director for Corporate and Community Services at NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde, and she was one of the first paediatric nurses to become what we call a Scottish Patient Safety Fellowship, as it was back then, but we call it now the Scottish Quality and Safety Fellowship, and that's the lead level quality improvement course for clinicians here in Scotland. Jen has won Nurse of the Year in 2013 and has also went on to win the Scottish Woman of the Year for Services to Medicine in 2019. And since 2015, Jennifer's held a position of a chief nurse within Glasgow, but she's broadened that remit across the board in the last couple of years. She's always focused on quality and is a big advocate, as I said before, around that person-centred and family-integrated care model. And now to my conversation with Jennifer. Welcome back, folks.
Delighted to be joined by Jennifer Rogers, Deputy Nurse Director at NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde. Jennifer, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, Jonathan, for having me.
And thanks very much for agreeing to be on. So you're right in the midst of our COVID response and our largest health board. I mean, how has that been over the last 14 months?
That's a some question to start with, Jonathan. I don't think I can describe it in a few words. You could talk for a long time about it. Obviously, I started it when COVID hit. I was in a different job. I was the chief nurse for paediatrics and neonates. So how was it? I mean, in the beginning, to be honest, it felt like you were in the start of a horror movie, preparing for something that was coming and not really knowing if all the preparations you were doing for the thing that was coming were exactly the right preparations. And every day was ever changing and dynamic, and a huge amount of communication and support with staff, and just really working together as a team. And I think we did that very well. And I think the whole country's done that very well. And then obviously in November, they had a changed job to this job, which covers all the six health social care partnerships and now care homes in a professional kind of capacity and infection control as well. So that was just, if you remember, at the start of the second wave, but before we had the vaccine. So it was before, a month or two before we had the vaccine rollout. So that was my big challenge. And then I had the joy, in a sense, of organising and rolling out vaccines for all our 6.5 care home, 1,000 care home residents, which I did using my QI methodology with run charts and daily huddles and tests of change. And we just had a fantastic time doing that, and we managed to deliver, and it was Pfizer, so very complex cold chain, but we managed to do that within 20 days right across all of the six health and social care partnerships. So it was great.
Wow, some sleepless nights then, I'm sure, in the new job. So you just recently moved into that deputy director's role, but I wonder if I could just take you back and briefly, in your own words, just give us a wee bit of insight into your background in nursing and into perhaps QI and when you first were introduced to QI.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just always been in my nature to be a little bit of just to challenge things and think a bit differently. And then a year or so after I qualified, I went and travelled and worked abroad for 5 years. And that gave me real exposure to different health systems, different cultures, different ways of working. And I came back from that experience to Glasgow and got a job in York Hill, full of beans and full of ideas. You can imagine I was probably quite annoying. Like, I was like, why are we doing drug line? We don't have to do a drug line. We could do it a different way. So I wanted to change everything all at once, and obviously you can't do that. And it took me a while to learn how to do that and how to really sort of pace things and approach things in a way that you will get a sustainable change. So I started my master's. I did my master's when I was still a staff nurse at York Hill. And that helped build my confidence in processes around how you actually achieve change and how you maybe gently challenge things a bit with kindness and with the right language and articulate things properly. But I still didn't have the QI skills, although I was beginning to have skills a bit similar to that, until I became a senior staff nurse, then a senior charge nurse. And when I was a senior charge nurse, we were part of the test at the launch of the Scottish Patient Safety Paediatric Programme. So our ward did all the work around that, and that was great. I loved that, and that sort of got me interested, and I noticed the fellowship, and it was early days of the fellowship, so 10 years ago now. Yeah. I started the Scottish Patient Safety Fellowship, and then that changed my world, I guess, really, because that gave me the tools, the networks, the insight, the exposure to what you can what you can do with using quality improvement methodology. So you can only imagine what was like in between my fellowship residentials.
I mean, everybody speaks very highly of things like skill and the, it's now known as the Scottish Quality and Safety Fellowship, and in terms of how that's been kind of almost life-changing or career-altering. I mean, was that the impact that it had for you, or was it just kind of another building block, or did it have that kind of transformational type change in how you approach quality?
It definitely had a transformational type change on how I approached QI, and it did give me a lot of confidence to be able to deliver things and evidence that you could deliver things. I think perhaps before that project would take a lot longer, and you have more confidence to fail. I think after having a year with the fellowship and the QI projects, failure is a thing that's just part of that, you know, and failure is maybe not the right word, but you know, you don't get everything right, and that is okay. And you can just go back and think, right, what was it? And actually, it's more than okay, because it's a great learning experience, and it really is. And learning how to embrace that and talk about it openly and say, yes, no, got that wrong, but that's fine. What we're going to do is this. And being able to do things a little more at speed. I was always frustrated with the pace of change. Mm-hmm. And UI helps you do change a bit faster. So it was transformational. And it was certainly transformational in the people that I was exposed to across Scotland and even across the world, and able to meet and have conversations with. And I mean, I felt like I had met people at last that thought in a similar way to I had thought. So, I mean, I was delighted with it. I was delighted. It was a great opportunity.
Oh, fantastic. And yeah, I think that was one of the things I got from going on skill, was that you all of a sudden, you're in a room with other people who think and act like you. And it's so reassuring. Yeah. One thing that you're kind of known for both across Scotland, the UK, and even internationally, Jennifer, is what matters to me, or what matters to you. How did that idea come into your life, and what's it kind of made possible for you?
Well, I've always been interested in person-centeredness and listening, and what happened was, and I just spoke about the fellowship opening up networks, so through the fellowship I went on a trip to one of the IHI conferences in Paris, and at that I heard Maureen Bisignano speak, and she was the chief exec of the IHI at the time, and she talked about flipping the question about, you know, the negative, what's the matter, always starting your place from a sort of negative and thinking about more asset based, what matters to you. So, and it was just a small part of her talk, and I was a senior charge nurse then, and I thought, a way back in the plane home to Paisley, so I can just do this right now, and my ward doesn't cost any money, I don't need to ask permission for this. So I started asking children what mattered to them, and getting them to draw a picture poster or write a wee list, like on a poster, about what mattered to them. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine the team were like, oh, here she goes, you know, again, we know what they're going to say. But what we found very quickly was they didn't say what we thought they would say. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of consolidated my thought process, that we just make assumptions that we know what matter to people. And actually, we don't. We're making that. And we do it with our daily lives as well, like probably with our partners and all sorts of people we interact with. I know what they're thinking. We don't. We just think that we do. So we think that we know what patients want and need, but actually there's a disconnect between what we think and what they actually want and need. And very quickly discovered that with my wee project in Ward 15 in the RH in Paisley. And that project grew over the year in Paisley to every single children being asked every single day, what matters to you? and doing their wee posters. And then I was asked after a year or so to take it to Glasgow, which was York Hill at the time. So I rolled it out in Glasgow alongside two other QI projects. So I just went into a job where I was just doing improvement for a year across that system. And so I did it there. And then from there, one of my colleagues heard about it, Geraldine. She worked in older people's care, and she said, well, if you can do this with kids, I can do it with people with dementia, just interested in people with dementia at that time. And so she did it there, and then she was doing that with some people and their families with dementia, and a guy in the next bed says, are you going to ask me that? And she said, no, because you can tell us, you know. And he said, yeah, but nobody's ever asked me. So she thought, oh, why am I only asking people with dementia? You know, I should ask everybody. So it gradually grew from there. And I think people looking at the What Matters to Me movement and listening to it might think it happened quickly, but this has been 10 years. It hasn't really. It's been 1 year doing this, and then spread into older people. And that same year, it became part of the paediatric Scottish Patient Safety aims, you know, one of their aims. So we spread it across Scotland with the help of the national team. And then it became central to the Person-Centred Care Collaborative, which started just a few years after that. So when we launched the collaborative, the What Matters to Me work was a huge part of it. And then I started engaging with other countries, and we met Anders from Norway. And together with Anders from Norway and Sean here in Scotland, the national team, we started this What Matters to You Day, the 6th of June. So this year it's the 9th of June. So that's been a massive promotion for this kind of shift of culture, which is what we're trying to achieve, a huge fundamental shift in the way healthcare is. The 9th of June this year, hashtag WMTY21. Please join in.
Get your pugs in there. So from Paris to Paisley comes some great ideas. So thinking about that practically, you'd mentioned there about kind of getting kids to draw, and that's a very kind of interactive and kid-friendly way of doing it. And how do you have this What Matters to You conversation and ask a patient, is it literally going up to a patient and saying, excuse me, sir, what matters to you? or you know, how might you do that practically? And also, you know, for people that are listening, what makes it difficult? What types of context makes it difficult? And actually, how can we make it easier?
Yeah, so it's a great question. How do you do it? Because some people just understand that straight away, and some people it's abstract. And actually, in some situations, if you were just to go up to somebody and ask them that, it would be quite abstract. So what we realized this as well quite early, and what we did was we did lots of promotional examples around the ward. So big What Matters to You freezes with all the things that people have said that matter to us, and that's part of the promotional day. It's trying to promote this idea of what we're asking and about listening to that. So we did a lot of that, and sometimes we would explain to families, okay, so, you know, we really, in order for us to be able to look after you like properly, it helps us to know about you and what matters to you. So tell us a bit about what matters to you. And that kind of thing usually works. And you can say and if they're struggling a wee bit with it, you can say, well, there was somebody in that was about your age last week, and they said what matters to them was, you know, this, this, and this. And then soon they'll get a flow and they'll be off either writing their picture. And another thing on that, quite quickly when we started doing the wall freezes, parents of children, so either ones that were too young, so little babies, too young to write their own list or draw, or not able to, wanted to complete them. So now it's everybody. It doesn't need to be the actual kid that does it. The mum or the dad or anybody can do it. And that's the same for adults as well.
Fantastic. And I've got to imagine that kind of influences the kind of power dynamics between the patient and the clinician in terms of creating some kind of parity, or certainly putting them on the same level. Could you speak a bit more about that, how it influences the power dynamics?
Yeah, I think it links to the second question you just asked me a second ago about what makes it difficult. Mm-hmm. So what can make it difficult, I think, is one of the things that I get a lot is I think we are trained to fix things as doctors and nurses and people that are working in healthcare. We want to fix you, don't we? Mm-hmm. And actually asking a really open question like what matters to you can be a little bit intimidating, because it puts you in a little bit of a place of vulnerability. Because what if you tell me something that I can't fix? You know, I'm a fixer. I want to fix. but you might tell me something and I can't change that. So we've talked a lot about this over the years. And I mean, for me, I think for one thing, people don't usually respond with something that is massively difficult. But the other thing is, this often listening is the intervention. Like it's really important to have the conversation. So better to have the conversation, even if you can't be a fixer, you know, better to have the conversation and have listening as the intervention, and leads you on to other things. And, you know, who knows where that conversation may take you, than not have the conversation.
Yeah, and it kind of strikes me that it's a kind of almost a trust building exercise between, you know, the nurse and the patient, the doctor and the family member, whatever it would be. So, yeah, it's perhaps less about the actual outcome of that conversation, as you said, actually having the conversation. So we're obviously talking about quality improvement, and a key aspect to quality improvement is not just your aim and your ideas, but it's actually measures. So how do you know that things are improving and getting better? Is what matters to you something that you can measure? Should you measure it? How would you know that those conversations are changing the culture within the ward, for example?
So I think yes and no is my answer to that question. So you can clearly measure process quite easily. And we've done that for years, like measured process. So how many, you know, have we asked everyone what matters to them in your ward or not? Like how many haven't we asked? And at the very early days, it took us a while to build that up. So we had run charts and things with our process measure. I mean, I'm really an outcomes girl. Like, I like to see the outcomes from things. And if we can get outcome measures, I much prefer them to process measures, though I do understand we need to process measures too, if we do. And so outcomes, we have measured in terms of feedback. So did we ask you what matters to you? And, you know, did we listen to what matters to you? And did we do what matters to you? Like actually asking people. I don't believe just checking if something's written down, a tick box or something, that means we were actually having a meaningful conversation. So outcomes are around what people tell us. Did you feel listened to? Did we do what matters to you? So that's the way that I believe. So that's what we've been doing for some time, and certainly now we're coming kind of out of the pandemic. I don't know whether I should say that or not, but we'll be looking at doing that as part of excellence in care, which does have a process measure around it. We'll be looking around an outcome measure for that.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. So we've been talking just now about kind of the what marks do you type conversation between staff and patients, or staff and family members, is kind of opening up and starting to build that relationship. Could we use this between staff? Is this something we could be asking, you know, you're obviously a deputy nurse director and you'll be responsible for kind of providing leadership to lots of staff. Is this something you ask your staff?
Yeah. Absolutely. So we've been asking staff for some time, years in fact, probably within the first couple of years, even in Paisley, I was asking staff to and they actually did it with the glitter and the things the same as they got quite creative with it. But of course, we've been asking staff for a long time what's important to them, what matters to them. And it's actually such a rich way of understanding where your staff are at and what we can do as a team around about what makes a good day a good day. And now you'll know that this is a fundamental part of the IHI's Joy at Work framework. So asking and looking for the, what's the stones in your shoe? What can we do? What are the little wins that we can do that is going to make things better? So absolutely, it's about building a whole culture. Mm-hmm. So we should be asking our staff all the way through the organisation, right from the top, all the way through the organisation, and really building that culture of person-centeredness around what matters, a what matters culture, I call it. I wanted to add something about the measures, Jonathan.
Sure, sure.
The other measures are, there's some supplementary, there's measures we already measure, so falls, complaints, all these sort of harms. Mm-hmm. And we know that organisations that do person-centred care well have better outcomes in terms of harms. So we have looked at these other measures in areas that are doing what matters to you in person-centeredness very well. And I think a good story to demonstrate that was Rosie's story. You might remember Rose was one of Geraldine's patients in Langlands and had dementia and had already a fractured femur and was one of the first patients that they asked what matters to you to fill out a what matters to you to put above her bed. And her niece said, oh, my Aunt Rose always had her rosary beads, but the rosary beads were tidied away, you know, with infection control, tidied away in the drawer. So they got them out, put it on the what matters to you. So all staff, and this is an interesting thing about the what matters to you boards as well, is it's, you interact with more than just a doctor or a nurse. You interact with domestics, with catering staff, with phlebotomy, with maybe a physio. Loads of people will interact with you while you're in hospital, and they won't all be looking at a really kind of detailed nursing care plan or a medical note. So this is an in for people to be together with another person that they understand a little bit straight away. Anyway, got sidetracked there. So Rose got her rosary beads because everybody, as I say, could see that this was important to Rose. So she had her rosary beads, and with her rosary beads, Rose calmed down. So she didn't need a one-to-one anymore. She had a one-to-one nurse. She was at false risk again. You know, she was really agitated, and she had calmed down with just that simple thinking about what matters and listening and doing what matters. So I do think that person-centred care and achieving that is inextricably linked to safety and safer outcomes.
Yeah, and I think not only is it true in that wonderful example you gave us, but you're also kind of highlighting that the interconnected nature of a lot of these things, the what matters to you and the joy at work being strongly aligned and helping each other, and the fact that having this what matters to you conversation with people can kind of mitigate or reduce risk, which can ultimately impact levels of harm that may come to patients. So as it sounds really simple, but the impact that it has is massive. And if you spend any time kind of reading up about what matters to you and the different initiatives and different way that it's come through our health service, you'll see that. So you mentioned this year it's going to be What Matters to You Day is going to be on the 9th of June. Yeah. And here in Scotland, it's about 10 years or so of celebrating this What Matters to You movement. How has your kind of understanding of that question perhaps changed over the last 10 years? Has it changed? Have you, you're in a different place of thinking about it now than you were 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. So when I just went and started this in my ward, it definitely wasn't a movement, and it was probably a bit radical in a sense. And then I realised I connected with a few other people, you know, both within Scotland and out with, and now it's in over 50 countries, you know, so it's quite different. It's built slowly, year on year, person to person, story to story. You know, one of my favourite was we met some people from Brazil, and then this lady from Brazil took the What Matters to Me is that kids had done in Glasgow and the stories, and had, and I was having a conversation with people in Brazil about them, and then these wee Brazilian kids started writing and drawing, and they linked it back to the people in Paisley. So it was really nice. Like, kind of things. So it's felt really connected. I think just as you mentioned, the frameworks that have come out over the course of the last 10 years and Realistic Medicine, all of these documents reference the work of What Matters to Me and our What Matters to Me movement. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that it's part of a shift in culture of healthcare. I do believe that it's a long game, but it is achieving that shift. I do believe that it's more than the sum of its parts. You know, it's more than just finding out a wee bit more about you, although it importantly is that, but it's also around permission to have meaningful conversations with people and people to say things that they wouldn't otherwise say unless mm-hmm. you ask them that very open question. I think it's championing a culture that's away from hierarchy, you know, a much more relational curiosity and real person-centeredness.
Yeah, and just talking about and curiosity there as we kind of wind down, what do you think the challenges and opportunities exist, certainly within your nursing fraternity, when it comes to QI and the use of QI over the next couple of years, for example?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm feeling pretty positive about that, to be honest. I think QI's came a long way in the last decade. In Scotland, with its national programme, was a huge commitment to building capability for quality improvement across nurses and wider healthcare. I'm certainly absolutely dedicated to that across Greater Glasgow and Clyde and across wider Scotland. So I'm feeling positive about building QI over the next few years. I think there's a real energy for it. I think nurses are good at it. And yeah, I think working together, we will be able to achieve amazing things over the next few years as we recover from the pandemic using our QI skills.
Fantastic. So Jennifer, one last question before I let you go. It would be, you know, what's your top tip or your top tips at the start of the conversation? You'd mentioned you had kind of always been curious and always wanted to learn and try things differently. I mean, what would your top tips be for other folk that are just starting out on their quality improvement journey?
I would say just go for it. So don't think, oh gosh, is it right? Or just go for it. I think small projects really can change the world, and What Matters to You is a testament of that. I think I would say to people to seek out critical friends that will help them, you know, to think through the challenges, because it is challenging, and you get a lot of difficult conversations. Like, people will never be as excited as you are about your project. People mm-hmm. learn to live with that. You know, you'll get a lot of, no, we can't do that. But that's okay. Expect that and plan for that, and almost welcome it. I welcome that now. I'm happy when people say, no, we can't possibly do person-centered visiting. You know, I'd be like, excellent, let's have a conversation about that, you know, and yes, welcome that. And remember that it's probably about 80% relational. Listen to people around about you, because people come to work, they want to do the right thing. I think a huge amount of kindness and respect for what everybody around you is trying to do, and really listen and take on board if they don't want to engage in the project. Why is that? Maybe it is not the right project. Maybe there's something about it. Maybe you're going about it the wrong way. So be dynamic. Don't get too stuck on a certain way. Think about the outcome. And think about, well, there's different ways that I could maybe achieve that outcome, and working together. I mean, we traditionally have worked in silos, I think, you know, side by side rather than together. And working together is so important. I think you have to be tenacious and really learn to let things go as well. Reflect a bit and just learn to let things go and move on. And I think also know that The job will never be done. There's a lot to do.
That's a good line. I like that. The job will never be done. Well, Jennifer, thank you very much for taking the time to have a conversation with me today. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks once again to Jennifer for that conversation. A lot of fantastic content there and to unpick, and a lot of it really relevant to QI practitioners. Jen spoke about starting small and testing your ideas, as well as then that kind of spread into different areas, and how you might measure and understand if this work is having an impact. So lots of really helpful information there. And again, if you want to know more information, you can go to whatmatterstoyou.scot and you can find out all the information about the upcoming What Matters to You Day on the 9th of June, as well as resources and case studies and other information about that movement. Thank you for listening to this episode of the QI Guy in Conversation With. I hope you enjoyed it. Tell us what you think about the podcast in social media or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a PDSA, or should I say a review, wherever you find us. And of course, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get yours. Until next month, take care.